Right, Lula and I said in unison. Clown went around back, and Lula and I marched up to the front door. I rapped on the door, and Lula and I stood to either side. There was the unmistakable sound of a shotgun ratcheting back. Lula and I gave each other an oh-shit look, and Bender blasted a 2-foot hole in his front door. Lula and I took off running. We dove into the car head first. There was another shotgun blast. I scrambled behind the wheel and took off, tires smoking. I whipped the car around the side of the building, jumped the curb, and skidded to a stop inches from Clown. Lula grabbed Clown by the front of his shirt, pulled him into the car, and I rocketed away.
"What happened?" Clown asked. "Why are we leaving? Wasn't he home?"
"We changed our mind about getting him tonight," Lula said. "We could have got him if we really wanted, but we changed our mind."
"We changed our mind because he shot at us," I said to Clown.
"I'm pretty sure that's illegal," Clown said. "Did you shoot back?"
"I was thinking about it," Lula said, "but you gotta fill out a lot of papers when you shoot someone. I didn't want to take the time tonight."
"At least you got to hold the cuffs," Clown said.
Lula looked down at her hands. No cuffs.
"Uh-oh," Lula said. "I must have dropped the cuffs in the excitement of the moment. It wasn't that I was scared, you know. I just got excited."
On the way through town, I stopped at Soder's bar. "This will only take a minute," I told everyone. "I need to talk to Steven Soder."
"Fine by me," Lula said. "I could use a drink."
She looked over at Clown.
"How about you, Puffin' Stuff?"
"Sure, I could use a drink too. It's Saturday night, right? You gotta go out and have a drink on Saturday night."
"I could have had a date," Lula said.
"Me too," Clown said. "There are lots of women who want to go out with me. I just didn't feel like being bothered. Sometimes it's good to take a night off from all that stuff."
"Last time I was in this bar, I sort of got thrown out," Lula said. "You don't suppose they're going to hold a grudge, do you?"
Soder saw me when I walked in.
"Hey, it's Little Miss Loser," he said, "and her two loser friends."
"Sticks and stones," I said.
"Have you found my kid yet?"
A taunt, not a question. I shrugged. The shrug said, "Maybe I have, but then again, maybe I haven't."
"Loser," Soder sang.
"You should learn some people skills," I said to him. "You should be more civil to me. And you should have been nicer to Dottie earlier today." That got him standing up straighter.
"How do you know about Dottie?"
Another shrug.
"Don't give me another one of them shrugs," he said. "That bird brain ex-wife of mine is a kidnapper, and you better tell me if you know anything."
I had him wondering about the extent of my knowledge. Probably not smart, but definitely satisfying. "I've changed my mind about wanting a drink," I said to Lula and Clown.
"Okay by me," Lula said. "I don't like the atmosphere in this bar anyway."
Soder took another look at Clown.
"Hey, I remember you. You're the jerk-off lawyer who represented Evelyn."
Clown beamed.
"You remember me? I didn't think anyone would remember. Boy, how about that?"
"Evelyn got control of the kid because of you," Soder said. "You made a big issue about this bar. You put my kid with a drugged-up moron, you incompetent fuck."
"She didn't look drugged up to me," Clown said. "Maybe a little distracted."
"How about if I distract my foot up your ass?" Soder said, making for the end of the long oak bar.
Lula shoved her hand into her big leather shoulder bag.
"I got Mason here somewhere. I got a gun."
I turned Clown around and pushed him toward the door.
"Go!" I yelled in his ear. "Run for the car!"
Lula still had her head down, rummaging in her bag.
"I know I got a gun in here."
"Forget the gun," I said to Lula. "Let's just get out of here."
"The hell," Lula said. "This guy deserves to get shot, and I'd do it if I could just find my gun."
Soder rounded the bar and charged after Clown. I stepped in front of Soder, and he gave me a two-handed shove.
"Hey, you can't shove her like that,"
Lula said, and she smacked Soder on the back of his head with her bag. He whirled around, and she hit him again, this time catching him in the face, knocking him back a couple feet.
What?
Soder said, dazed and blinking, swaying slightly. Two goons started at us from the other end of the bar, and half the room had guns drawn.
Uh-oh,
Lula said.
Guess I left my gun in my other handbag.
I grabbed Lula by the sleeve and gave her a yank toward the door, and we both took off running. I beeped the car open with my remote. We all jumped in, and I zoomed away.
Soon as I find my gun, I've got a mind to go back there and pop a cap up his ass,
Lula said. In all the time I've known Lula, I've never known her to pop a cap up anyone's ass. Unjustified bravado was high on our list of bounty hunter talents.
I need a day off, I said. I especially need a day without Bender.
One of the good things about hamsters is that you can tell them anything. Hamsters are non-judgmental, as long as you feed them. I have no life, I said to Rex. How did it come to this? I used to be such an interesting person. I used to be fun. And now look at me. It's 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and I've watched Ghostbusters twice. It's not even raining. There's no excuse, except that I'm boring. I glanced over at the answering machine. Maybe it was broken. I lifted the phone receiver and got a dial tone. I pushed the message button, and the voice told me I had no messages. Stupid invention. I need a hobby, I said. Rex sent me a yeah-right look. Knitting? Gardening? Découpage? I didn't think so. Okay, then, how about sports? I could play tennis. No, wait a minute. I'd tried tennis, and I sucked. What about golf? Nope, I sucked at golf, too. I was wearing jeans and a T-shirt, and the top button was open on my jeans. Too many cupcakes. I got to thinking about Steven Soder calling me a loser. Maybe he was right. I scrunched my eyes closed to see if I could pop out a pity tear for myself. No luck. I sucked my stomach in and buttoned my pants. Pain. And there was a roll of fat hanging over the waistband. Not attractive. I stomped into my bedroom and changed into running shorts and shoes. I was not a loser. I had a small roll of fat hanging over my waistband. No big deal. A little exercise and the fat would disappear. And there'd be the added benefit of endorphins. I didn't exactly know what endorphins were, but I knew they were good, and you got them from exercise. I got into the CRV and drove to the park in Hamilton Township. Could have gone running from my back door, but where's the fun in that? In Jersey, we never miss an opportunity for a car trip. Besides, the driving gave me prep time. I needed to psych myself up for this exercise stuff. I was going to really get into it this time. I was going to run. I was going to sweat. I was going to look great. I was going to feel great. Maybe I'd actually take up running. It was a glorious blue sky day, and the park was crowded. I got a spot toward the back of the lot, locked the CRV up, and walked to the jogging path. I did some warm-up stretches and took off at a slow run. After a quarter mile, I remembered why I never did this. I hated it. I hated running. I hated sweating. I hated the big, ugly running shoes I was wearing. I pushed through to the half-mile mark where I had to stop, thank God, for a stitch in my side. I looked down at the fat roll. It was still there. I made it to a mile and collapsed onto a bench. The bench looked out over the lake, where people were rowing around in boats. A family of ducks floated close to the shore. Across the lake, I could see the parking lot and a concession stand. There was water at the concession stand. There was no water by my bench. Hell, who was I kidding? I didn't want water anyway. I wanted a Coke and a box of Cracker Jacks. I was looking out at the ducks, thinking there were times in history when fat rolls were considered sexy, and wasn't it too bad I didn't live during one of those times? A huge, shaggy, prehistoric orange beast bounded over to me and buried his nose in my crotch.
Yipes!
It was Morelli's dog, Bob. Bob had originally come to live at my house, but after some shifting around, had decided he preferred living with Morelli.
"He's excited to see you,"
Morelli said, settling next to me. "I thought you were taking him to obedience school."
"I did. He learned how to sit and stay and heal. The course didn't address crotch sniffing."
He looked me over.
"Flushed face, the hint of sweat at the hairline, hair pulled into a ponytail, running shoes. Let me take a guess here. You've been exercising."
"And?"
"Hey, I think it's great. I'm just surprised. Last time I went running with you, you took a detour into a bakery."
"I'm turning over a new leaf."
"Can't button your jeans?"
"Not if I want to breathe at the same time." Bob spotted a duck on the bank and raced after it. The duck took to the water, and Bob splashed in up to his eyeballs. He turned and looked at us, panic-stricken. He was possibly the only retriever in the entire world who couldn't swim. Morelli waded into the lake and dragged Bob back to the shore. Bob slogged onto the grass, gave himself a shake, and immediately ran off, chasing a squirrel. "You're such a hero," I said to Morelli. He kicked his shoes off and rolled his slacks to his knees.
"I hear you've been up to some heroics, too. Butch Dizowitz and Frankie Berlew were in Soder's bar last night."
"It wasn't my fault."
"Of course it was your fault,"
Morelli said.
"It's always your fault."
I did an eye roll.
"Bob misses you."
"Bob should call me sometime. Leave a message on my machine." Morelli slouched back on the bench.
"What were you doing in Soder's bar?"
"I wanted to talk to him about Evelyn and Annie, but he wasn't in a good mood."
"Did his mood take a downturn before or after he got clocked with the shoulder bag?"
"He was actually more mellow after Lula hit him."
"Dazed was the word Butch used."
"Dazed could be accurate. We didn't stay around long enough to find out." Bob returned from the squirrel chase and woofed at Morelli.
"Bob's restless,"
Morelli said.
"I promised him we'd walk around the lake. Which direction are you headed?"
It was 1 mile if I retraced my steps, and 3 miles if I continued around the lake with Morelli. Morelli looked very fine with his pants rolled up, and I was sorely tempted. Unfortunately, I had a blister on my heel. I still had a cramp in my side, and I suspected I wasn't at my most attractive. "I'm headed for the lot," I said. There was an awkward moment where I waited for Morelli to prolong our time together. I would have liked him to walk back to the car with me. Truth is, I missed Morelli. I missed the passion, and I missed the affectionate teasing. He never tugged at my hair anymore. He didn't try to look down my shirt or up my skirt. We were at an impasse, and I was at a loss as to how to end it.
"Try to be careful,"
Morelli said. We stared at each other for a moment, and we each went our own way. Chapter 7. I limped back to the concession stand and got a Coke and a box of Cracker Jacks. Cracker Jacks don't count as junk food because they're corn and peanuts, which we know to be high in nutrition. And they have a prize inside. I walked the short distance to the water's edge, opened the box of Cracker Jacks, and a goose rushed up to me and pecked me in the knee. I jumped back, but he kept coming at me, honking and pecking. I threw a Cracker Jack as far as I could, and the goose scrambled after it. Big mistake. Turns out, tossing a Cracker Jack is the goose equivalent to a party invitation. Suddenly, geese were rushing at me from every corner of the park, running on their stupid goose-webbed feet, waggling their fat goose asses, flapping their big goose wings, their beady black goose eyes fixed on my Cracker Jacks. They fought among themselves as they charged me, squawking, honking, viciously snapping, jockeying for position.
"Run for your life, honey! Give them the Cracker Jacks!"
an old lady yelled from a nearby bench.
"Throw them the box, or those honkers'll eat you alive!"
I held tight to my box.
I didn't get to the prize. The prize is still in the box.
Forget the prize.
There were geese flying in from across the lake. Hell, for all I knew, they could have been flying in from Canada. One of them hit me square in the chest and sent me sprawling. I let out a shriek and lost my grip on the box. The geese attacked with no regard for human or goose life. The noise was deafening. Goose wings beat against me, and goose toenails ripped holes in my t-shirt. It seemed like the feeding frenzy lasted for hours, but in fact it was maybe a minute. The geese departed as quickly as they came, and all that was left were goose feathers and goose poop. Huge, gelatinous gobs of goose poop, as far as the eye could see. An old man was on the bench with the old woman.
"You don't know much, do you?" he said to me.
I picked myself up, crept to my car, opened the door with the remote, and numbly wedged myself behind the wheel. So much for exercise. I drove on autopilot out of the lot and somehow found my way to Hamilton Avenue. I was a couple blocks from my apartment building when I sensed movement on the seat next to me. I turned my head to look, and a spider the size of a dinner plate jumped at me.
Yow! Holy shit! Holy shit!
I sideswiped a parked car, took the curb, and came to a stop on a patch of lawn. I threw my door open and hurled myself out of the car. I was still jumping around, shaking my hair out, when the first cops arrived.
"Let me get this straight," one of the cops said. "You almost totaled the Toyota that's parked at the curb, not to mention major damage on your CRV, because you were attacked by a spider?"
"Not just a spider. We're talking more than one, and big. Possibly mutant spiders. A herd of mutant spiders."
"You look familiar," he said. "Aren't you a bounty hunter?"
"Yes, and I'm very brave, except for spiders."
And except for Eddie Abruzzi.
Abruzzi knew how to frighten a woman. He knew all the creepy, crawly things that were demoralizing and irrationally frightening. Snakes and spiders and ghosts on fire escapes. The cops exchanged a glance that said, "Girls," and swaggered off to the CRV. They poked their heads inside, and a moment later there was a double shriek, and the car door was slammed shut.
"Jesus freaking Christ!" one of them yelled. "Holy crap!"
After a brief discussion, it was decided this was beyond the ability of a simple exterminator, and once again, animal control was called. An hour later, the CRV was pronounced spider-free. I possessed a ticket for reckless driving, and I'd exchanged insurance information with the owner of the parked car. I drove the remaining couple blocks, parked the CRV, and stumbled into my building. Mr. Kleinschmidt was in the lobby.
"You look terrible," Mr. Kleinschmidt said. "What happened to you? Are those goose feathers stuck to your shirt? And how'd your shirt get all ripped and grass-stained?"
"You don't want to know," I told him. "It's really ugly."
"I bet you were feeding the geese at the park," he said. "You never want to do that. Those geese are animals."
I gave up a sigh and stepped into the elevator. When I let myself into my apartment, I realized something was different. My message light was blinking.
Yes! Finally! I punched the button and leaned forward to listen.
"Did you like the spiders?" the voice asked.
I was still standing in the kitchen, sort of dumbstruck by the day, when Morelli showed up. He rapped once on the front door, and the unlocked door swung open. Bob bounded in and began running around investigating.
"I understand you had a spider problem," Morelli said.
"That's an understatement."
"I saw your CRV in the lot. You trashed the whole right side."
I played the phone message for him. "It's Abruzzi," I said. "It's not his voice on the tape, but he's behind this. He thinks this is some war game, and someone must have followed me to the park. Then they unlocked my car and dumped a load of spiders into it while I was running.
How many spiders?
5 large tarantulas.
I could talk to Abruzzi.
Thanks, but I can handle it. Yeah, right. That's why I ripped the door off a parked car. Truth is, I'd love to have Morelli step in and make Abruzzi go away. Unfortunately, it would send a bad message. Dopey, helpless female needs big, strong man to get her out of unfortunate mess. Morelli gave me the once-over, taking in the grass stains, goose feathers, and rips in my shirt.
I got Bob a hot dog after we walked around the lake, and there was a lot of talk at the concession stand about a woman who'd been attacked by a flock of geese.
Imagine that.
They said she provoked the attack by feeding one of the geese a Cracker Jack.
It wasn't my fault, I said. Damn stupid geese. Bob had been roaming the apartment. He came into the kitchen and smiled up at us. A piece of toilet paper dangled from his lips. He opened his mouth and stuck his tongue out. His mouth opened wider, and he horked up a hot dog, a bunch of grass, a lot of slime, and a wad of toilet paper. We both stared at the steaming pile of dog barf.
Well, I guess I should be going now,
Morelli said, looking to the door.
I just wanted to make sure you were okay.
Wait a minute. Who's gonna clean this up?
I'd like to help, but... Oh, man, that smells really bad.
He had his hand over his nose and mouth.
Gotta go,
he said.
Late. Something to do.
He was in the hall.
Maybe you should just leave and rent a new apartment.
Another opportunity to use the bitch look.
I didn't sleep well, which I'm sure is normal after you've been attacked by killer geese and mutant spiders. At 6 o'clock, I finally hauled myself out of bed, took a shower, and got dressed. I decided I needed a treat after the crappy night, so I packed myself off in the CRV and drove into town to Barry's Coffees. There was always a line at Barry's, but it was worth it, because he had 42 different kinds of coffee, plus all the exotic espresso drinks. I ordered a double skinny caramel mochaccino and took my drink to the window bar. I squeezed in next to an old lady with chopped-off spiky hair dyed flame red. She was short and round with apple cheeks and an apple shape. She was wearing large turquoise and silver earrings, elaborate rings on every gnarled finger, a white polyester warm-up suit, and platform Skechers. Her eyes were heavily gunked with mascara. Her dark red lipstick had been transferred to her cappuccino cup.
Hey, honey, she said in a 2-pack-a-day voice. Is that a caramel mochaccino? I used to drink them, but they gave me the shakes. Too much sugar. You keep drinking them, you're going to get diabetes. My brother has diabetes, and they had to cut his foot off. It was real ugly. First, his toes turned black, and then the whole foot, and then his skin started falling off in big clumps. It was like a shark got hold of him and ripped off chunks of meat.
I looked around for another place to stand while I drank my coffee, but the place was packed.
He's in a nursing home now on account he can't get around so good, she said. I visit him when I can, but I got things to do. You get to be my age and you don't want to sit around wasting time. I could wake up any morning and be dead. Of course, I keep myself in real good shape. How old do you think I am?
80?
74. I look better some days than others, she said. What's your name, honey?
Stephanie.
My name's Laura. Laura Minello.
Laura Minello? That sounds familiar. Are you from the Berg?
Nope. I've lived all my life in North Trenton, Cherry Street. I used to work at the Social Security office. Worked there for 23 years, but you wouldn't remember me from there. You're too young.
Laura Minello.
I knew her from somewhere, but I couldn't place it. Laura Manello gestured at a red Corvette parked in front of Barry's.
See that fancy red car? That's my car. Pretty slick, huh?
I looked at the car, and then I looked at Laura Manello. Then I looked at the car again. Holy cow. I dug around in my shoulder bag, searching for the papers Connie had given me. Have you had the car long? I asked Laura.
Couple days.
I pulled the papers out of my bag and scanned the top page. Laura Manello, accused of Grand Theft Auto, age 74, residence on Cherry Street. God works in mysterious ways. You stole that Corvette, didn't you? I asked Manello.
I borrowed it. Old people are allowed to do things like that so they can go for the gusto before they croak.
Oh, boy. I should have looked at the bond agreement before I accepted the file from Connie. Never take on old people. It's always a disaster. Old people think conveniently, and you look like a jerk when you apprehend them. This is a strange coincidence, I said. I work for Vincent Plum, your bail bondsman. You missed a court date, and you need to reschedule.
Okay, but not today. I'm going to Atlantic City. Just pencil something in for me next week.
It doesn't work that way. A blue and white cruised by Barry's. It stopped just beyond the red vet, and two cops got out.
Uh-oh, Laura said. This don't look good.
One of the cops was Eddie Gazzara. Gazzara was married to my cousin, Shirley, the whiner. Gazzara checked the plate on the vet, and then he walked around the car. He went back to the blue and white and made a call.
Damn cops, Laura said. Haven't got anything better to do than to go around and bust senior citizens. There should be a law against it.
I rapped on the coffeehouse window and caught Gazzara's attention. I pointed to Laura sitting next to me and smiled. Here she is, I mouthed to Gazzara. It was close to noon, and I was parked in front of Vinny's office, trying to muster the courage to go inside. I'd followed Gazzara and Laura Manello back to the station, and I'd gotten a body receipt from Manello. The body receipt would get me 15% of Manello's bond, and the 15% would make an essential contribution toward this month's rent. Ordinarily, the delivery of a body receipt is a happy occasion. Today it would be marred by the fact that in the pursuit of Andrew Bender, I'd lost four pairs of cuffs. Not to mention that on all occasions, I'd looked like a complete idiot. And Vinny was in residence, lurking in his lair, anxious to remind me of all this. I set my teeth, grabbed my bag, and headed for the door. Lula stopped filing when I walked in.
Hey, Jellybean, Lula said. What's new?
Connie looked up from her computer.
Vinny's in his office. Break out the garlic and crosses.
What kind of mood is he in?
Are you here to tell me you captured Bender?
Vinny yelled from the other side of his closed door.
No? Then I'm in a bad mood.
How can he hear with the door closed? I asked Connie. She raised her hand, middle finger extended.
I saw that, Vinny yelled.
He had video and sound installed so he doesn't miss something, Connie said.
Yeah, it's second hand, Lula said. It came out of the adult video store that closed. I wouldn't touch it without rubber gloves.
Vinny's door opened, and Vinny stuck his head out.
Andy Bender is a drunk, for Christ's sake. He wakes up in the morning, falls into a can of beer, and never climbs out. He should have been a gift. Instead, he's making you look like a moron. He's one of them crafty drunks, Lula said. He can even run when he's drunk, and he shot at us last time. You're gonna have to pay me more if I'm gonna get shot at.
You two are pathetic, Vinny said. I could catch this guy with one hand tied behind my back. I could catch this guy blindfolded.
Huh, Lula said.
Vinny leaned forward.
You don't believe me? You think I couldn't bring this guy in? Miracles happen, Lula said.
Oh, yeah? You think it would take a miracle? Well, I'll show you a miracle. You two losers be here at 9 tonight, and we'll take this guy down.
Vinny pulled his head back inside his office and slammed the door shut.
Hope he's got cuffs, Lula said.
I gave Connie the body receipt for Laura Manello and waited while she wrote my check. We all turned and looked when the front door opened.
"Hey, I know you," Lula said to the woman who walked into the office. "You tried to kill me."
It was Maggie Mason. We'd met her on a previous case. Our relationship with Maggie had started out bad, but had ended up good.
"You still mud wrestling at the snake pit?"
Lula asked.
"The snake pit closed down."
Maggie did a shit-happens shrug.
"It was time for me to get out anyway. Wrestling was fun for a while, but my dream was always to open a bookstore. When the pit folded, I persuaded one of the owners to go into business with me. That's why I stopped in. We're gonna be neighbors. I just signed a lease on the building next door."
I was sitting in front of Vinny's office in my wrecked car, wondering what to do next, and my cell phone rang.
"You gotta do something," Grandma Mazur said. "Mabel was just over for the 40th time. She's driving us nuts. First off, she bakes all day, and now she's given the stuff to us because she hasn't got any more room in her house. She's wall-to-wall bread. And this last time, she started crying. Crying? You know how we don't do good with crying here."
"She's worried about Evelyn and Annie. They're the only family she has left."
"Well, find them," Grandma said. "We don't know what to do with all these coffee cakes."
I drove to Key Street and parked across from Evelyn's house. I thought about Annie sleeping in her bedroom upstairs, playing in the small backyard. A little girl with curly red hair and large, serious eyes. A kid who was best friends with my niece, the horse. What kind of a kid would buddy up with Mary Alice? Not that Mary Alice isn't a great kid, but let's face it, she's a couple inches off average. Probably Mary Alice and Annie were both on the outside looking in, needing a friend, and they found each other.
"Talk to me," I said to the house. "Tell me a secret."
I was sitting there waiting for the house to say something, and a car pulled up behind me. It was the big black Lincoln with two men in the front. I didn't have to think too long or hard to figure out it was Abruzzi and Darrow. The smart thing would be to take off and not look back. Since I had a long history of rarely doing the smart thing, I locked my door, cracked the window on the driver's side, and waited for Abruzzi to come talk to me.
"You've got your door locked," Abruzzi said when he walked over. "Are you afraid of me?"
"If I was afraid of you, I'd have the motor running. Do you come here often?"
"I like to keep an eye on my properties," he said. "What are you doing here? You aren't planning on breaking in again, are you?"
"Nope. I'm just sightseeing. Strange coincidence that you always show up when I'm here."
"It's not a coincidence," Abruzzi said. "I have informants everywhere. I know everything you do."
"Everything?" He shrugged.
"Many things. For instance, I know you were at the park on Sunday, and then you had an unfortunate accident with your car."
"Some moron thought it would be cute to put spiders in my car."
"Do you like spiders?"
"They're okay. Not as much fun as bunnies, for instance."
"I understand you hit a parked car."
"One of the spiders took me by surprise."
"The element of surprise is important in a battle."
"This isn't a battle. I'm trying to put an old woman's mind at ease by finding a little girl."
"You must think I'm stupid. You're a bounty hunter, a mercenary. You know perfectly well what this is about. You're in this for the money. You know what the stakes are, and you know what I'm trying to recover. What you don't know is who you're dealing with. I'm toying with you now, but at some point the game will get boring for me. If you haven't come over to my side by the time I get bored with the game, I'll come after you with a vengeance, and I'll rip the heart out of your body while it's still beaten."
Yikes. He was dressed in a suit and tie. Very tasteful. Looked expensive. No gravy stains on the tie. He was insane, but at least he dressed well. "Guess I'll go now," I said. "You probably want to go home and get medicated."
"Nice to know you like bunnies," he said.
I cranked the engine over and took off. Abruzzi stood there staring after me. I checked my rearview mirror for a tail. Didn't see anyone. I wiggled around a couple streets. Still no tail. I had a bad feeling in my stomach. It felt a lot like horror. I drove past my parents' house and noticed Uncle Sandor's Buick was parked in the driveway. My sister was using the Buick until she saved enough money to get her own car, but my sister was supposed to be at work. I pulled in behind her and popped into the house. Grandma Mazur, my mom, and Valerie were all at the kitchen table. They had coffee in front of them, but no one was drinking. I opted for a soda and took the fourth chair. "What's up?"
"Your sister got fired from her job at the bank," Grandma Mazur said. "She got into a fight with her boss, and she got herself fired on the spot."
Valerie fighting with someone? Saint Valerie? The sister with the disposition of vanilla pudding? When we were kids, Valerie always turned her homework in on time, made her bed before going to school, and was thought to bear an uncanny resemblance to the serene plaster statues of the Virgin Mary found on Berg lawns and in Berg churches. Even Valerie's period came and went with serenity, always arriving on schedule to the minute, the flow delicate, the mood swings going from nice to nicer. I was the sister who got cramps. "What happened?" I asked. "How could you get in a fight with your boss? You just started that job."
"She was unreasonable," Valerie said, "and mean. I made one tiny mistake, and she was horrible about it, yelling at me in front of everyone. And before I knew it, I was yelling back, and then I got fired."
"You yelled?"
"I haven't been myself lately."
"No shit. Last month she decided she was going to try being a lesbian, and this month she was yelling. What was next? Full head rotation?" "So, what was the mistake?"
"I spilled some soup. That's all I did. I spilled a little soup."
"It was one of them cup of soup things," Grandma said to me. "It had them itty-bitty noodles in it. Valerie dumped the whole thing onto a computer, and it seeped between the cracks and blew out the system. They just about had to shut the bank down."
I didn't want bad things to happen to Val. Still, it was kind of nice to see her screw up after a lifetime of perfection. "I don't suppose you remember anything new about Evelyn," I asked Valerie. "Mary Alice said she and Annie were best friends."
"They were school friends," Valerie said. "I don't remember ever seeing Annie."
I looked over at my mother. "Did you know Annie?" "Evelyn used to bring her around when she was younger, but they stopped visiting a couple years ago when Evelyn started having problems. And Annie never came to the house with Mary Alice. For that matter, I don't think Mary Alice ever talked about Annie."
"At least not so we could understand," Grandma said. "She might have said something in horse talk."
Valerie was looking depressed, pushing a cookie around on the kitchen table with her finger. If I was depressed, the cookie would be history. Come to think of it. "Do you want that cookie?" I asked Valerie.
"I bet those little soup noodles looked like worms," Grandma said. "Remember when Stephanie got worms? The doctor said they came off the lettuce. He said we didn't wash the lettuce good enough."
I'd forgotten about the worms. Not one of my favorite childhood memories. Right up there with the day I vomited spaghetti and meatballs on Anthony Baldari. I finished my soda, ate Valerie's cookie, and went next door and checked in with Mabel. "Anything new?" I asked Mabel.
"I got another call from the bail bonds company. They won't just come in here and throw me out, will they?"
"No, it'll have to go through legal channels, and the bond company involved is reputable."
"I haven't heard from Evelyn since she left," Mabel said. "I thought for sure I'd hear from her by now."
I returned to my car, and I tapped a call into Dottie. "It's Stephanie Plum," I said. "Is everything okay?"
"That woman you told me about is still sitting in front of my house. I even took the day off because she's creeping me out. I called the police, but they said they couldn't do anything."
"Do you have my card with my pager number?"
"Yes."
"Call me if you need to see Evelyn. I'll help you get past Jean Ellen." I disconnected and did a palms up in the car all by myself. What more could I do? I jumped when my phone rang. It was Dottie calling back.
Okay, I need help. I'm not saying I know where Evelyn is staying. I'm just saying I need to go somewhere, and I can't be followed.
Understood. I'm about 40 minutes away.
Come in through the back again.
So maybe Jean Ellen was doing me a favor. She'd put Dottie into a situation where she needed me. How bizarre is that? First thing I did was stop by the office and get Lula.
Let's rock and roll, Lula said. I'll distract the heck out of Jean Ellen. I'm the queen of distraction.
Great. Just remember, no shooting.
Maybe a tire, Lula said.
Not a tire, nothing, no shooting.
I hope you realize this puts a big crimp in my distracting.
Lula was wearing the new boots with a lemon-yellow spandex miniskirt. I didn't think she'd have a distraction problem. This is the plan, I said when we got to South River. I'm going to park one street over from Dottie, and we'll go in through the back. Then you can keep Jean Ellen busy while I take Dottie to Evelyn. I took the shortest path through the yards and knocked once on Dottie's back door. Dottie opened the door and stifled a scream.
Holy Jesus,
she said.
I wasn't expecting two people.
What she wasn't expecting was a plus-size black woman bulging out of a tiny yellow skirt. This is my partner Lula, I said. She's good at creating a distraction.
No kidding.
Dottie was dressed in jeans and sneakers. She had a bag of groceries on the kitchen table and a 2-year-old under her arm.
This is my problem, Dottie said. I have a friend who has no food in the house and can't go out to get any. I want to take these groceries to her.
Is Jean Ellen out front?
She left about 10 minutes ago. She does that. She'll sit there for hours and then she'll go away for a while, but she always comes back.
Why don't you take the groceries to your friend when Jean Ellen leaves?
You said not to do that. You said even if I didn't see her, she'd follow me.
Good point. Okay, here's the plan. You and I will cut through the back and take my car, and Lula will drive your car. Lula will make sure we're not followed, and she'll decoy Jean Ellen off if Jean Ellen appears.
No good,
Dottie said.
I have to go alone, and I need someone to sit with the kids. My sitter just punked out on me. It's going to have to be that I cut through the yard and use your car, and you take care of the kids. I won't be long.
Lula and I shouted no simultaneously. Not a great idea, I said. We don't babysit. We don't actually know anything about kids. I looked over at Lula. Do you know anything about kids? Lula shook her head vigorously.
But I don't know nothing about kids. I don't want to know nothing about kids either.
If I don't get this food to Evelyn, she's going to go out and get it herself. If she's recognized, she'll have to move on.
Evelyn and Annie can't stay hidden forever, I said.
I know that. I'm trying to straighten things out.
By talking to Soder? The surprise was obvious on her face.
You were watching me, too.
Soder didn't look happy. What were you arguing about?
I can't tell you, and I need to go. Please let me go.
I want to talk to Evelyn on the phone. I need to know she's okay. If I can talk to her on the phone, I'll let you go. And Lula and I will babysit.
Hold on here, Lula said. That don't sound like a deal to me. Kids spook me out.
Okay, Dottie said. I don't see where it'll harm anything to let you talk to Evelyn.
She went to the living room to dial. There was a brief conversation. Dottie returned and passed the phone to me. Your grandmother is worried, I told Evelyn. She's worried about you and Annie. Tell her we're all right, and please stop looking for us. You're just making things more complicated. I'm not the person you have to worry about. Stevens hired a private investigator, and she's good at finding people. Dottie told me. I'd like to talk to you. I can't talk now. I have to get things straightened out first. What things? I can't talk about it. And she hung up. I gave Dottie the keys to my car. Keep your eyes open for Jean Ellen. Check your rearview mirror for a tail. Dottie grabbed the bag of groceries.
Don't let Scotty drink out of the toilet,
she said. And then she took off. The two-year-old was standing in the middle of the kitchen floor, looking at Lula and me like he'd never seen humans before.
You think that's Scotty?
Lula asked. A little girl appeared in the doorway leading to the bedrooms.
Scotty is a dog, she said. My brother's name is Oliver. Who are you?
We're the babysitters,
Lula said. Chapter 8
Where's Bonnie?
The little girl asked.
Bonnie always babysits for Oliver and me.
Bonnie punked out, Lula said. So you get us.
I don't want you to babysit for me. You're fat.
I'm not fat. I'm a substantial woman.
And you better watch what you say on account of you say things like that in first grade and they'll kick your ass out of school. I bet they don't put up with that kind of talk in first grade.
I'm gonna tell my mother you said ass. She won't pay you after she finds out you said ass. And she won't ever have you babysit again.
And what's the bad news? Lula asked.
This is Lula, and I'm Stephanie, I said to the little girl. What's your name?
My name is Amanda, and I'm 7 years old, and I don't like you either.
Bet she's gonna be a treat when she's old enough for PMS,
Lula said. Your mom shouldn't be long, I said to Amanda. How about we put the television on?
Oliver won't like that,
Amanda said. Oliver, I said, do you want to watch television? Oliver shook his head.
No,
he yelled.
No, no, no.
And he started crying. Loud.
Now you did it, Lula said. Why is he crying? Man, I can't hear myself think. Somebody get him to stop.
I bent down to Oliver's level. Hey, big guy, I said. What's the matter?
No, no, no,
he yelled. His face was brick red, scrunched up in anger.
He keep frowning like that and he's gonna need Botox,
Lula said. I felt around in the diaper area. He didn't seem wet. He didn't have a spoon stuck up his nose. No limbs seemed to be severed. I don't know what's wrong, I said. I mostly know about hamsters.
Well, don't look at me, Lula said. I don't know nothing about kids. I never even was one. I was born in a crack house. Being a kid wasn't an option in my neighborhood.
He's hungry, Amanda said. He's gonna cry like that until you feed him.
I found a box of cookies in the cupboard and held one out to Oliver.
No!
He yelled, and he knocked the cookie out of my hand. A scruffy-looking dog rushed in from the bedroom area and ate the cookie before it hit the floor.
Oliver doesn't want to eat a cookie, Amanda said.
Lula had her hands over her ears.
I'm gonna go deaf if he don't stop this howling. I'm getting a headache.
I got a bottle of juice out of the refrigerator. Do you want this? I asked.
No!
I tried ice cream.
No!
How about a leg of lamb? Lula asked. I wouldn't mind having some leg of lamb.
He was on the floor now, on his back, kicking his heels against the tile.
No, no, no!
This is a full-blown tantrum, Lula said. This kid needs a time out.
I'm telling my mother you made Oliver cry,
Amanda said. Hey, give me a break, I said. I'm trying. You're his sister. Help me out here.
He wants a grilled cheese sandwich,
Amanda said.
It's his favorite food.
Good thing he didn't want the leg of lamb, Lula said. We wouldn't have had to cook that.
I found a pan and some butter and cheese, and I started the bread frying in the pan. Oliver was still bellowing at the top of his lungs, and now the dog was yapping, running in circles around him. The doorbell rang, and I figured with the sort of luck I was having, it was probably Jean Ellen. I left Lula in charge of the grilled cheese sandwich, and I went to answer the door. I was wrong about it being Jean Ellen, but I was right about my luck. It was Steven Soder.
What the hell? He said. What are you doing here?
Visiting.
Where's Dottie? I need to talk to her.
Hey, Lula called from the kitchen. I need an opinion on this grilled cheese.
Who's that? Soder wanted to know. That doesn't sound like Dottie. That sounds like the fatso who hit me with her purse.
We're in the middle of something right now, I said to Soder. Maybe you could come back later.
He muscled his way past me and stalked into the kitchen.
You, he shouted at Lula. I'm gonna kill you. Not in front of the KID, Lula said. You don't want to use that kind of violent talk. It stirs up all kinds of latent shit when they get to be teenagers.
I'm not stupid, Amanda said. I can spell, and I'm telling my mother you said shit.
Everybody says shit, Lula said.
She looked to me.
Doesn't everybody say shit? What's wrong with shit?
The grilled cheese looked perfect in the fry pan, so I lifted it out with a spatula, slid it onto a plate, and gave it to Oliver. The dog stopped running in circles, snatched the sandwich off the plate, and ate it. And Oliver went back to howling.
Oliver has to eat at the table,
Amanda said.
There's a lot of stuff to remember in this house, Lula said. I want to talk to Dottie, Soder said.
Dottie isn't here, I yelled over Oliver's screaming.
Talk to me.
In your dreams, Soder said. And for Christ's sake, somebody get this kid to shut up. The dog ate his sandwich, Lula said. And it's all your fault on account of you distracted us. So do your Aunt Jemima thing and make him another sandwich, Soda said.
Lula's eyes bugged out of her head.
Aunt Jemima? Excuse me? Did you say Aunt Jemima?
She leaned forward so her nose was inches from Soder's, hands on hips, one hand still holding tight to the fry pan.
Listen to me, you punk-ass loser. You don't want to call me no Aunt Jemima. Oh, I'm going to give you an Aunt Jemima in the face with this fry pan. Only thing stopping me is I don't want to K-I-L-L-U in front of the B-R-A-T-S.
I saw Lula's point, but being working-class white, I had a totally different perspective on Aunt Jemima. Aunt Jemima conjured nothing but good memories of steaming pancakes dripping with syrup. I loved Aunt Jemima.
Knock, knock, Jean Ellen said at the open door. Can anyone come to this party?
Jean Ellen was back to being dressed in the black leather outfit.
Wow,
Amanda said.
Are you Catwoman?
Michelle Pfeiffer was Catwoman, Jean Ellen said.
She looked down at Oliver. He was on his back again, kicking and screaming.
Stop, Jean Ellen said to Oliver.
Oliver blinked twice and stuck his thumb in his mouth. Jean Ellen smiled at me.
Babysitting?
Yep.
Nice.
Your client is being intrusive, I said.
My apologies, Jean Ellen said. We're leaving now.
Amanda, Oliver, Lula, and I all stood like statues until the front door closed behind Jean Ellen and Soder. Then Oliver went back to his screaming. Lula tried the stop thing, but Oliver only screamed louder, so we made him another grilled cheese. Oliver was finishing his sandwich when Dottie returned.
How'd it go?
Dottie asked. Amanda looked at her mother. Then she took a long look at Lula and me.
Fine,
Amanda said.
I'm going to watch television now.
Steven Soder stopped by, I said. Dottie's face went ashen.
He was here? Soder came here?
He said he wanted to talk to you. Color flamed on her cheekbones. She put a hand to Oliver, a mother's protective gesture. She smoothed the baby fine hair back from Oliver's forehead.
I hope Oliver wasn't too much trouble.
Oliver was terrific, I said. It took us a while to figure out he wanted a grilled cheese sandwich, but after that he was terrific.
Sometimes being a single mom gets a little overwhelming, Dottie said. The responsibility of it, and the alone part. It's okay when everything's going normal, but
Sometimes you wish there was another adult in the house.
You're afraid of Soder, I said.
He's a terrible person.
You should tell me what's going on. I could help.
At least I hoped I could help.
I need to think, Dottie said.
I appreciate your offer, but I need to think.
I'll stop around tomorrow morning to make sure you're okay, I said. Maybe we can straighten this out tomorrow. Lula and I were halfway to Trenton before either of us spoke.
Life just gets weirder and weirder, Lula finally said.
That pretty much summed it up as far as I was concerned. I suppose I'd made progress. I'd spoken to Evelyn. I knew she was safe, for now. And I knew she wasn't all that far away. Dottie had been gone less than an hour. Soder was bothersome, but I could understand his actions. He was a jerk, but he was also a distraught dad. Most likely Dottie was negotiating some sort of truce between Soder and Evelyn. What I couldn't understand was Jean Ellen. The fact that Jean Ellen was still doing surveillance bothered me. The surveillance seemed pointless now that Dottie knew about Jean Ellen. So why was Jean Ellen sitting across from Dottie's house when we left? It was possible that Jean Ellen was exerting pressure in the form of harassment. Make Dottie's life unpleasant and try to get her to cave. There was another possibility that felt pretty far out, but had to be considered. Protection. Jean Ellen was sitting out there like the Queen's guard. Maybe Jean Ellen was guarding the link to Evelyn and Annie. This led to a bunch of questions I couldn't answer, such as, who was Jean Ellen guarding Dottie from? Abruzzi?
You gonna show up at 9?
Lula asked when I pulled to a stop in front of the bond's office. I guess so. How about you?
Wouldn't miss it for anything.
I stopped at the store on my way home and picked up a few groceries. By the time I reached my apartment, it was dinner time, and the building was filled with cooking smells. Minestrone soup simmering behind Mrs. Carwatt's door. Burritos from the other end of the hall. I approached my door with my key in my hand, and I froze. If Abruzzi could get into my locked car, he could get into my locked apartment. I needed to be careful. I put the key in the lock. I turned the key. I opened the door. I stood in the hall with the door open for a moment, taking in the feel of my apartment, listening to the silence. Reassured by my heartbeat and the fact that a pack of wild dogs didn't rush out to devour me. I crossed the threshold, left my front door wide open, and walked through the rooms, carefully opening drawers and closet doors. No surprises, thank God. Still, my stomach felt icky. I was having a hard time pushing Abruzzi's threat out of my head.
Knock, knock, a voice called from the open doorway.
Clown.
I was in the neighborhood, he said, so I thought I'd say hello. I have some Chinese food with me, too. I got it for myself, but I got too much. I thought you might want some. But you don't have to eat it if you don't want to. But then, if you want to eat it, that would be great. I didn't know if you liked Chinese food, or if you like to eat alone, or...
I grabbed Clown and pulled him into my apartment.
What's this?
Vinny said when I showed up with Clown. Albert Clown, I told him. Attorney at law.
And?
He brought me supper, so I invited him along.
He looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. What'd he bring you to eat? Dinner rolls?
Chinese, Clown said. It was one of those last-minute things that I just felt like eating Chinese.
I'm not crazy about taking a lawyer along on a bust, Vinny said.
I won't sue you, I swear to God, Clown said. And look, I have a flashlight and defense spray and everything. I'm thinking about getting a gun, but I can't decide if I want a six-shooter or a semi-automatic. I'm sort of leaning to the semi-automatic.
Go with a semi-automatic, Lula said. It holds more bullets. You can never have too many bullets.
I want a vest, I said to Vinny. Last time I did a takedown with you, you shot everything to smithereens.
That was an unusual circumstance, Vinny said.
Yeah, right. I got Clown and myself suited up in Kevlar, and we all packed off in Vinny's Cadillac.
A half hour later, we were parked around the corner from Bender.
Now you're going to see how a professional operates, Vinny said. I have a plan, and I expect everyone to do their part, so listen up.
Oh, boy, Lula said. A plan?
Stephanie and I will take the front door, Vinny said. Lula and the clown will take the back door. We all enter at the same time and subdue the rat bastard.
That's some plan, Lula said. I would never have thought of that one.
K-L-O-U-G-H-N, Albert said.
All you have to do is listen for me to yell, Bond Enforcement, Vinny said. Then we crash down the doors and rush in with everyone yelling, Freeze! Bond Enforcement.
I'm not doing that, I said. I'll feel like an idiot. They only do that on television.
I like it, Lula said. I always wanted to crash down a door and yell stuff.
I could be wrong, Clown said, but crashing down doors might be illegal. Vinny buckled himself into a nylon-webbed gun belt.
It's only illegal if it's the wrong house.
Lula took a Glock out of her purse and shoved it into the waistband of her spandex miniskirt.
I'm ready, she said. Too bad we don't have a TV crew with us. This yellow skirt would show up real good.
I'm ready, too, Clown said. I've got a flashlight in case the lights go off.
I didn't want to alarm him, but that's not why bounty hunters carry 2-pound mag lights. Has anyone checked to make sure Bender is home? I asked. Anyone talk to his wife?
Well, listen under the window, Vinny said. It looks like someone's watching television in there.
We all tiptoed across the lawn and pressed ourselves against the building and listened under the window.
Sounds like a movie, Clown said. Sounds like a dirty movie.
Then Bender's gotta be here, Vinny said. His wife isn't gonna be sitting around all by herself watching a porno flick.
Lula and Clown went around to the back door, and Vinny and I went to the front door. Vinny drew his gun and rapped on the door, which had been patched with a big piece of plywood.
Open up! Vinny shouted. Bond Enforcement!
He took a step back and was ready to give the door a kick with his boot when we heard Lula break into the house from the rear, yelling at the top of her lungs. Before we had a chance to react, the front door burst open and a naked guy rushed out at us, almost knocking me off the stoop. Inside the house, there was pandemonium. Men were scrambling to leave, some of them naked, some of them dressed, all of them waving guns, shouting, Out of my way, motherfucker! Lula was in the middle of it.
Hey, she was yelling, this here's our bond enforcement operation. Everybody stop running.
Vinny and I had worked our way into the middle of the room, but we couldn't find Bender. Too many men in too small a space, all trying to get out of the house. No one cared that Vinny had his gun drawn. I'm not sure anyone noticed in the mayhem. Vinny got off a round and a chunk of ceiling fell down. After that, it was quiet, because no one was left in the room but Vinny, Lula, Clown, and me.
What happened? Lula asked. What just happened here?
I didn't see Benza, Vinny said. Is this the right house?
Vinny?
A female voice called from the bedroom.
Vinny?